Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. So today's topic is training, and we're going to discuss why changing technique sometimes makes you weaker. Now, this would be under the assumption that the changing technique is a good change. So sometimes the difficult part for someone trying to learn how to lift better is that it's hard to know if the person that you're learning from actually knows their stuff. So there's been examples over the years that I've been exposed to where someone either looks really good, so they give nutrition and or like bodybuilding or aesthetic based training advice, and it's absolutely awful. They just look good because of kind of like genetic, so they were given good looks. They were already lean. So if somebody has always had a six-pack abs, they're probably not really good advice for fat loss. They never had to lose any fat. So if somebody's always had nice, rounded, kind of pretty muscles, they're probably not really good advice for how to build that for yourself because they've always already had it. So same thing for somebody being strong. So in strength sports, sometimes you'll see people who are naturally already strong, and they'll kind of get a lot of attention from people. People want to say, man, how'd you get so strong? And the person shares their training techniques, but it wasn't their training techniques. They were already just strong. So I have met people in my life where the first deadlift they ever did was like 500 pounds or like 400 pounds or 600 pounds, or they could squat like right away. I remember there was one guy I met within 6 months of lifting in the gym, he could squat 600 pounds raw. Like just knee sleeves. And it's like, you are a jackass. So, because I am totally jealous of that. But if somebody's always had something, they're probably not going to be the best teacher at that. So think about if you had somebody who, was born into a really rich family and they've been rich their whole life and they were going to teach people on how to make money. They've never had to make money. So it's true that maybe they've used the money they had to make more money, but they never had to start from scratch. So if somebody's never been where you are, it's going to be harder for them to kind of teach how you can go from there to where they are, because they didn't travel that distance either. So they didn't take that same journey. And that's where sometimes getting advice from people is very difficult, because you would look at someone who seems to have what you want and you say, oh, I want to know how they got it. Sometimes they just got it the day they were born. Sometimes they got it really easy. So it kind of really depends on, it's hard to know if they know what they did to get it, if that makes sense. So now, if you're listening to me, chances are that you've probably already listened to some other podcasts and you've heard a little bit about my background. And I don't want to like necessarily take 5 minutes here to try to sell myself. It would be good for me to tell you why the things I tell you are true, in my opinion, I guess, in a sense. Like, I do have formal education, so I have master's in nutrition, bachelor's in health and phys ed. I have personal training certification through ACSM. I've taught at the university level for 7 years. I've been a personal trainer for money, where people paid me money, and this is the job that I was doing since, I was 18, so 17 years. I've been lifting weights myself for 19 years, been working out for 20. So I have a lot of kind of like formal education. I have a lot of just experiential background. So I've had over 1,000 clients, way over 1,000. I just stopped counting at 1,000 because any higher, it doesn't sound any, doesn't matter. 1,000 sounds good, or 1,200 sounds about the same. So, but I've had over 1,000 clients. So I do have the formal education, I have the experiential education. Now, I am still learning new stuff every single day. So I am still always learning. So you're never kind of done learning. You're always able to learn more. But how somebody would know is in the sense of, like, if I'm telling you guys on how to get strong, I can promise you that it's because I started with like very little. Now, I don't have the worst genetics ever. I have met people with worse genetics. But I had 2 years of lifting in, and by the time I graduated high school, and I was lifting like every damn day with weights and training my butt off, and I couldn't bench 225, I couldn't squat 315, absolutely not. And I could probably maybe do like a horribly rounded back, miserable 315 deadlift, but it definitely wouldn't have looked pretty. And those were kind of the numbers I started when I was 18. Over the years now, I've squatted 600 in sleeves, I've deadlifted 700, I've benched 430, so I have improved my numbers quite a bit over all the years. And I've done that with a bunch of injuries over the way, and I've also gained 100 pounds to my natural body weight, but I'm actually leaner at 100 pounds than when I started, so I have kind of walked the journey. So I've been the fat kid, I've been the skinny kid, I've been the weak kid, and I'm still always feeling like I'm weak, fat, skinny. So I don't think those kids ever go away. But that's the idea I want to kind of throw across there is when you get technique information and somebody tries to change your technique for you, I'm going to go with the assumption for this podcast that you paid money, you sought this person out, and you're fairly certain that this is good information. Now, with that assumption made, there is that asterisk that sometimes you do get bad information. So we're going to talk about why changing your technique, even if it's a good change, can sometimes make you feel weaker right away. So I'm going to give you an example of some stuff. We'll talk through it and kind of work our way. So this morning I was actually training a lady, and we were doing the leg press. And she's an older client, and we're working on preventing arthritic pains by getting her stronger so her muscles will take the stress away from her joints. And we're also battling osteoporosis, so we're lifting really heavy things to try to help thicken out her bones. So we actually have had bone scans done, and it wasn't like we ordered them. Her doctor was already doing them. And at first, we were able to negate any bone loss, and now we actually have thickened her bones. And it's taken a year and a half, almost 2 years, but we've actually reversed the process of osteoporosis, and she's in her 60s. And now she is leg pressing 325 pounds. We have a Nebula leg press, which is a much harder leg press than, say, Hammer Strength. So Hammer Strength leg press or Life Fitness, they're the same company. Those leg presses, you can load like 2,000 pounds. So it's a little kind of ridiculous. But we have a very hard leg press. And she's able to do it at 325 pounds for sets of 10. Actually, today we did sets of 12. And to give you a comparison, when we first started, she could barely do 90 pounds without her knees caving in and her heels lifting up and her kind of like quads and, you know, those muscles, teardrop muscles kind of taking over. So we went from 90 pounds up to 325, and the 325 is now for sets of 10s, and we're ready to move up even more. So we have run into a point where as she progresses from stage to stage, I've had to kind of give her more and more detail in terms of when is the maybe important time to breathe. So now that she's gotten stronger, her breathing will affect whether she can hit the right weight for the right numbers or not. So now she has to breathe correctly to get 325 for 10 or 12 reps. Whereas before, it may be like, you know, 225. She could be talking to me while she was doing it. It wouldn't have mattered much. So now that we're kind of getting closer with the skill of maximizing her current body's potential, we get more and more fine-tuned with our technique. So that way we can get more and more out of her body's potential. And one of the keys we've been working on is the breathing, but also her kind of pulling herself into the leg press machine a little bit. So creating some braced tension for her to be able to press out of. So before, sometimes she wasn't paying attention, and she'd even be talking with her hands while she was lifting. then other times she would kind of like push herself up out of the seat as a way to kind of like feel quote-unquote braced, but that was definitely not strong. So I'm teaching her now to pull a little bit into the seat, like she's trying to pull herself down into the seat, and that's creating bracing for her. Now, what happened today was, since that bracing concept is rather new, she's having to give mental effort towards the bracing, which now reduces the amount of mental effort she can put towards her actual pressing of the weight. And she found it like very, very difficult to get the 325 today, kind of a greater difficulty than what she had maybe expected. So what we talked about was when you add cues to your technique, when you add more components, at any one given time, you only have 100% of yourself to give. So if we're looking at like a single workout, I only have 100% of myself to give during this workout and during, say, this next set of an exercise. If I allocate, say, normally I pay attention to five things. I allocate my 100% to those five things. The, each of the five gets a percentage. They're not always equal, but for this purpose, we're going to say they're all 20%. So you're paying 20% attention to five different things. And that's the 100% that you have to give yourself. Well, what if I add a new cue or a new concept, and now you have to pay attention to six things? That means each of the previous five now gets less attention because you have to make room for that sixth one to come in. Now, that attention being spread out amongst new cues and still the old ones will result in us sometimes being less able to perform the exercise as well. So in her case, for example, let's just look at the concept of pressing with her legs. Previously, that's all she paid attention to, so that was 100% of what her effort went into. Now, all of a sudden, she had to pay attention to pulling down with her arms. So maybe she gave 15% attention to pulling down with her arms. But that means that now she only had 85% attention to give to her legs. But that 325 pounds kind of required all of that 85% or even 90%. So as she was trying to pay attention to pulling down, she would go to push. All of a sudden, the legs would kind of get really close to failing. All of a sudden, she'd have to allocate more of that effort and energy thought into the hands, back into the legs to be able to finish the rep. So that's ends up what's happening sometimes is when you focus on a new technique or cue, or you hyper-focus more into one that you already thought you were doing well, you're just wanting to put better attention into it. What ends up happening is that you start to divide your attention out, and you won't be able to perform as well to the actual moving of the weight. So we'll see this sometimes with people who are squatting. So maybe we change their foot position. It changes a little bit of the percentage of muscle firing. So it changes their muscle pattern during the movement. And now all of a sudden they'll move a little bit slower than normal. And they'll say to themselves is, well, it feels more efficient. Like it feels correct. But man, it feels really slow. And that is the same concept. Is what happened was, is we changed your percentage around, we changed your body around. You still only have 100% to give, but now your body's having to kind of think the process through. So whereas previously you might have been able to just kind of like, your brain said, muscles move, the muscles go, okay, done. Now all of a sudden, your brain says, muscles move. But move in this way. The muscles go, oh, okay, well, is this correct? And it sends a signal back up to the brain. The brain says, yeah, that's correct, which sends a signal back down to the muscles, and then the muscles can go. So now there's an added level of communication. So rather than just the brain signal to the muscle, there's now brain signal to the muscle, muscle back to the brain back to the muscle. So now we have that longer conversation. That is why you will move slower. Because now there's more communication happening, and that creates a delay in how your movement pattern fires. So there's kind of another reason why when we change or pay more attention to our technique in certain ways, our performance downgrades. So maybe, you know, previously if a person could squat 225 for five reps, now all of a sudden they're only getting three. So they're like, dang, you know, I know we can do five, but with this new technique, yeah, I feel better and it feels kind of more balanced. Like my knees don't hurt or my back doesn't hurt, but I can't do as much. And all that is it's a little bit of a delay in the nervous system communication. You did not get two reps weaker. So you still have the same strength. You just are now kind of allocating it out in different ways and paying attention to different pathways. And different cues, maybe even. So that's why that ends up happening. So now, sometimes I have had clients who are I live in Rock Hill, South Carolina, which is about 15-ish minutes south of Charlotte, which is a pretty big city. So sometimes people come down, and I've worked with clients for kind of one-off sessions, where say it's a CrossFit athlete, and you know, they're really high-level athletes. Like I've gotten to work with some athletes who have been to the CrossFit Games, but they were maybe really awesome at endurance, and they're not that great at strength. So their coach knows who I am, I know who they are, and they kind of send them down here, and we kind of work on strength and technique. And what ends up happening is I might change their positions. All of a sudden, we better use their muscles, and bam, they hit a new PR. So maybe it turns out to where, maybe we work up in the workout up to like only 90% of their one rep max, but now all of a sudden they hit 90% for four reps, which would indicate that they're, you know, actually moving better and they could probably hit a bigger PR. So typically at 90%, you're going to be lucky to get, you know, 2 to 3 reps. So if they're cranking out four, it shows you that that was an improvement, or will even actually beat their PR. So I'd have to have people come down, you know, and they might say, yeah, the most I've ever squatted was, you know, 365. All of a sudden we work together, we figure out good positions, and all of a sudden they hit 375. And that does happen. That is less likely to happen than what all the YouTube videos you would find make it seem like. So a lot of times people who sell coaching services, they will film and show you those sessions where things go super duper uber well, but that's not the most common. So, and that can make somebody who doesn't get that response feel like maybe they've failed. And absolutely, you're not a failure. So more often than not, when you change a technique, it ends up feeling better in the sense of you don't have specific joint pains and you feel like the movement is more better balanced, but you'll actually not be able to express your old level of strength. So that doesn't mean you're wrong, doesn't mean you're a failure, just means that people who are making their YouTube videos and trying to hype their services are being assholes and only showing you like the best case scenarios. So they're not showing you what true life really is. So now what ends up happening most often, like we said, is the movement will feel kind of sort of better, but it's going to feel slow. And you're like, man, I'm trying to move, like I'm telling my body to go, but it's just not moving as fast. And again, the reason why is your muscles are now adding a layer of communication. So the brain tells the muscle what to do. The muscle has to check with the brain to make sure that that's what it really wanted. And the brain says, yes, that's what I really want. So then it does it. And then to add on top of that, while you're doing the movement, the brain is paying attention to the muscles and the muscles are paying attention to the brain. So the muscles start to do it. And then the brain says, okay, I'm watching you. I'm watching you. Hey, don't do that. Do this. Okay, I'm watching you. And it kind of like supervises the process. Whereas before, the brain would say, hey, muscles, do this. And then the brain starts going off and doing other things because the muscles were already used to what they were doing. So that's that quote-unquote autopilot. So we all have had that experience where you're driving home from work or driving home from somewhere, and all of a sudden you pull in your driveway and you're like, holy shit. Like, I haven't been paying attention for like the last 20 minutes. How in the hell did I not hit anybody? And you just kind of like hit autopilot. You weren't really paying attention. And that's what our, whatever we do in our training that we do the most consistent, our body will turn autopilot on to where it does it so much that your brain doesn't have to think about it while it's doing it. Now, sometimes that can be a bad thing because you learn bad habits that way. So when you put in a new habit and you want to form a new autopilot, you have to get through all of the reps that it takes for your brain to finally decide, okay, you've been doing this consistently enough now, I'm going to make this my new normal. That's why when you practice new technique, it's ridiculously important that you are insanely consistent. So you never want to break that technique. So every time you do one bad rep, it resets the brain or makes the brain question that autopilot development. So you want to make sure that anytime you're learning a new technique, you never, never falter out of that technique. So you just hit that perfectly over and over and over and over. So the clients I work with in person and online, it's not uncommon for us to squat for a whole hour. And we'll do like sub-maximal weights, maybe 70, 80%. And they just hit those for like doubles or triples for like a freaking hour so we can get a ton of reps in. And I can stare at them and watch their mechanics. We can figure out what are their common mistakes and help educate them on what to watch while they work out on their own. And then all of a sudden when they go on their own, they can be super duper consistent, build up a lot of consistent reps, and create that new autopilot. Okay? So that's the reason why. There's two reasons there that we showed of why your performance can sometimes drop even if the technique changes you're making are positive, good changes. The first one was that we only have 100% of our attention to give. So if I give some of my more attention to this kind of technical cue thing, I have less attention to the actual just moving of the weight. So therefore, it feels a little bit harder to move that weight because you're not giving as much attention to it. The other one is that we're going to move you to different positions and your muscles are now having to increase their level of communication with the brain. That increased levels of communication, frequency of communication, is going to cause everything to move a little bit slower. Cool. So, what this means is that, number one, if you change your technique and things downgrade a bit, it does not mean you are wrong. Doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with you. That's just actually the more commonly what happens than, again, what we tend to see on the wonderful world of social media. So I had an example of one girl I worked with, woman, lady, whatever. We're about the same age. So, anyhow, kind of don't know what the term, like, girl is not appropriate. Woman sounds very, like, sounds very formal, and we're actually friends. So I'm getting way off track here. But anyhow, I was helping a female of the same age, and we were doing squat development. She had been squatting. She kind of hit a plateau, and she was having some pain in her hip. One of her hips was kind of hurting when she would squat. So we looked at her form. Her form was very quad dominant. She was overusing her quads and her lower back, and she wasn't using her hamstrings and her glutes correctly. Now, she had big glutes, so she had a big booty, but she wasn't actually using it very well. So it's kind of funny. So we actually were kind of joking about that throughout the process. But we changed her position around. We got her to get more balanced in her heels rather than in her toes. We got some of the work out of the quads and back into the glutes and hamstrings. Now, what ended up happening was, when she came in, she could do a very ugly, horrible-looking 275 squat that caused the hip pain. The first day we worked together on the new form, we had to stop at 95 pounds. That's all the weight that she could do correctly. That doesn't mean that she got weak enough from 275 to 95. She was still stronger, but she just could not move consistently as we got any heavier. It was very odd for her. There was a new set of muscles. Everything kind of felt different. So we had to build our way up from 95 pounds, which is the heaviest I let her go because that was the only one she could do right. Any heavier, she couldn't do it correctly. So then we took about, it ended up taking about 6 months, and we actually worked up to a new PR of 300 pounds. So in 6 months, she went from 275 looking like death and it hurt her to do it, down to 95 pounds, back up to 300 pounds, and she hit the 300 pounds with no pain whatsoever. So smoked it, looked great, and we're, you know, on our way to even more numbers. So, but that gives you an idea of what's more realistic, is that you're going to get an initial drop in restriction because of all the new changes to the technique and form and the mental allocation that you're going to have. So all of that happens, it creates everything to be slow, a little bit feeling awkward, and sometimes your performance downgrades. So you have to have patience. So her example was a little bit extreme in the sense that it took 6 months. More often, for most people, it takes anywhere from 1 to 3 months. So if you make a technique change, that means you minimally should give it a month's worth of training. So if you think of squats, if you squat twice a week, maybe that's 8 workouts. So you can think of it that way as well. Is you have to give it enough time for your body to develop that autopilot. That autopilot will only develop if you give it enough repetitions. And they have to be consistent. So think of every single time you break form while you're trying to learn a new technique, you mess up that autopilot creation. So every time you break form, you almost have to restart it. So don't break form. Also, you have to do your training set up in programming that allows for a lot of repetitions. So if you come into the gym and say, like, on, you know, one day a week you hit safety squat bar, another day of the week you hit back squat, another day of the week you hit front squat, that doesn't help. That's not a very good way of doing that if you want to improve your back squat, because only one of those 3 workouts are you actually using the correct positioning for the back squat. So instead, you would want to do the back squat. Maybe one workout you do pause squats, one workout you do normal squats, maybe like heavy singles. The next one, maybe you do, like, you know, 5x5, but you have to stay within the movement pattern that you want to develop. So if you want to develop a back squat, you have to stay with back squats. Okay, and the more repetitions you do, the faster you can create that autopilot, the faster you can gain new strength expression, and you can actually kind of regain your normal speed and confidence. Okay, there you go. So that is why when you change technique, sometimes you feel weaker, is that you're now allocating more brain power to things other than just moving the weight, and you're increasing the degrees of communication between your muscles and your brain. So you have to have patience, give it at least a month, So think of like 4 to 12 weeks, so 1 to 3 months. Give it some time, give it an honest effort, a lot of repetitions, and then see how you are from there. So if in 3 months you are not hitting new PRs, then it was probably not a good technique and you need to look again at maybe making another change. Okay? So hopefully that helped with creating some realistic expectations when you have to change over your technique and overhaul kind of like how you normally do things. This applies to more than just squat and deadlift and bench press. It can apply to bicep curls. It can apply to bodybuilding. I probably should say this at the very beginning because all you bodybuilders probably aren't even listening at this point. But if I want to improve my chest growth and I have to learn a new way to do chest flies, that might downgrade the amount of weight I can do. Maybe I normally could do 60s and now I have to accept doing only 40s. But those 40s done more correctly are going to better hit the muscle fibers that you're actually targeting. So maybe now you're reducing the amount of front delt involvement and bicep involvement. So it makes sense your strength would go down because you're no longer accidentally or unintentionally using two other muscles. Now you're purely isolated better into the chest. And that's why that might cause a downgrade in the amount of weight that you can use or even the reps you can perform. It definitely doesn't mean you're going to downgrade your results. It's actually going to improve your results. Okay, cool. So hopefully that helped. If you like this information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Brutal Iron Gym. Also, if you like the podcast, please share it with family and friends. So the more people we help, the happier the world will be. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we would love to hear from you. So this podcast is for you, so we know what you want to learn about. And you can reach us at our email at brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.